One of the world's leading spokespeople for the anti-nuclear movement, Dr. Helen Caldicott, has devoted the last 32 years to an international campaign of educating the public about the medical hazards of the nuclear age and the changes required to stop environmental destruction. Both the Smithsonian Institute and Ladies' Home Journal named her one of the most influential women of the 20th century, and she has honorary degrees from 19 universities. In 1971, Dr. Caldicott played a major role in Australia's opposition to French atmospheric nuclear testing in the Pacific, and in 1975 worked with the Australian trade unions to educate their members about the medical dangers of the nuclear fuel cycle, with particular reference to uranium mining. In 1977, she founded Physicians for Social Responsibility, an organization of 23,000 doctors whose international umbrella organization won the 1985 Nobel Peace Prize. She also founded the Women's Action for Nuclear Disarmament in the U.S. in 1980. Dr. Helen Caldicott ran for Australia's federal parliament as an independent candidate in 1987. A pediatrician and mother of three children, Dr. Caldicott has written for numerous publications and has authored five books: Nuclear Madness, Missile Envy, If You Love This Planet, A Plan to Heal the Earth, A Desperate Passion, an autobiography, and her most recent book, The New Nuclear Danger, George W. Bush's Military-Industrial Complex. Dr. Caldicott, I want to welcome you to our studios here. Thanks for joining us. I guess my first question for you really is, with all that's happening in the world today, what do you think is the biggest challenge facing the human race right now?
The threat of global annihilation. Everything that's happening at the moment is underpinned by the fact that America has 2,500 hydrogen bombs on hair trigger alert that can hit Russia in half an hour, and Russia has 2,500 hydrogen bombs on hair trigger alert that can hit America in half an hour. And on September 11th, after those planes went into the World Trade Towers and the Pentagon, America's nuclear alert went on to the highest state, which is DEFCON 2, the highest state of alert before George Bush got to press the button. It's not clear from the literature how long that state of alert lasted, but now with the Middle East blowing up into God knows what, and with a million troops facing each other and Pakistan and India all nuclear armed, we're really on hair trigger alert now, and I think everyone has to know that even though the Cold War's over, nothing has changed since the very frightening days of the 80s when we all watched The Day After, when we were scared of Reagan, when we thought there would be a nuclear war. But in fact, because nothing's changed, and because people are ignorant, and because the world is in a very hair-trigger situation now, we're in a much more dangerous position than I think the world has ever been.
With all that's been happening recently, we have, of course, the ABM Treaty, which you helped put in place in 1972?
No, I had nothing to do
with it. You had nothing to do with that?
No, I had only just started in Australia in 1972, moving Australia and New Zealand to oppose the French nuclear testing in the Pacific, and we were successful at that. But no, I had nothing to do with the ABM Treaty. But the Anti-Ballistic Missile Treaty is a keystone, cornerstone of all other nuclear arms control treaties, and George Bush has announced he will violate that in June, and that means the end of nuclear arms control. He doesn't even want to sign anything with Russia. I have never known anything like this administration. They are truly, truly nuclear cowboys. They published the other day the Nuclear Posture Review. For the first time ever, America said she will drop nuclear weapons on any country she so feels like doing. And that's countries without nuclear weapons, little tiny countries. I mean, how dare they do this? These people are nuclear cowboys, and somehow they've got a position of credibility with the American public because of September 11th. I think that the American people are so terrified by what happened. They wanted a daddy. And even though they've got a man who really isn't up to the job, they turned him into a daddy. They pedestalized him. In fact, Bush is not the president. He reads everything if you watch. He can hardly speak extemporaneously. When he does, he always makes mistakes. He was in Japan and made a little speech by himself, and the yen dropped, you know. I mean, he said, I can't remember, deflation instead of something. And the real president is Cheney, who's sort of like a mole. He lives underground now. He's hardly ever visible. He's a very dangerous character, and Cheney is more Rumsfeld is more dangerous. He's the Secretary of Defense. He now runs the foreign policy of the United States. Colin Powell has lost the battle within the administration. There's been almost a nuclear war going on within the administration between the moderates, the State Department, and Powell, and Rumsfeld and his gang of thugs. And I say thugs advisedly. They are Wolfowitz, Pearl, Rumsfeld, Hadley, Bolton, and I would refer you to my book, A New Nuclear Danger. I have really done small profiles on all of them, and most of my information has been gleaned from the New York Times, Washington Post, and the like. So what I'm saying is not way out. What I'm saying is in the open literature, in the news media, but I've put it all together. But I have to tell you that the whole of the world is trembling in its shoes at the moment, really. And the other thing that Bush did was Clinton worked really hard to try and engage the Israelis and Palestinians. And Bush, well, really, Cheney, walked away from that and just said, we don't care anymore. And they walked away for about 9 months till September 11th. And now you can see all hell is breaking loose. There, Israel's got over 200 nuclear weapons. Yeah. So I don't really know where it's going to end, but I do fear for the future for my grandchildren. And as a pediatrician, I'm speaking to you now as a doctor, only as a doctor, trying to look at the cause of this god-awful nuclear disease which infects our planet, even though there's no Cold War.
Can you talk a bit about the revolving door between government and the nuclear weapons industry?
Yeah, well, that's really what the book is about, George Bush's military-industrial complex. The people who really run this administration, well, you saw it illustrated with Enron. Bush was very close to Lay, who ran Enron. Many people in the Bush administration had Enron shares, including Cheney. And Enron and the Petroleum Ministry and the like enunciated Cheney's energy policy. So it's a corporate energy policy. It's got nothing to do with energy conservation or alternative energy or the sun or the wind or anything. It's just to use oil till the oil runs out. We'll have global warming and the ice caps are melting and, you know, we mightn't have a future. But in terms of the military, Lockheed Martin, which is now a huge corporation which ate up by takeover most of the other military corporations, it Rumsfeld's worked with them. Cheney's wife was on the board of Lockheed Martin for 20 years. Cheney's worked with them. And many people who are in the administration are former Lockheed Martin employees, and I've documented this in the book. As well as that, there are two major think tanks in Washington. They're not really think tanks. They're advertising agencies for Lockheed Martin, who wants to build Star Wars. And they are the Center for Security Policy, run by quite a strange character called Frank Gaffney, who worked with Reagan, who's absolutely pathologically devoted to Star Wars. And the people who sit on the board of the Center for Security Policy are Lockheed Martin representatives, including Edward Teller, who is Dr. Strangelove, who developed the hydrogen bomb and destroyed Robert Oppenheimer's career. He ultimately died as a result of that, and whose idea it is to have Star Wars. Teller calls it the third generation of nuclear weapons. And the other think tank is the Heritage Foundation. Now, if you really look at the press, watch the media, look at Jim Lehrer, look at Nightline, often people who are commentating politically are people from the Heritage Foundation. Now, the Heritage Foundation is not a think tank. It is an advertising agency for Lockheed Martin and for the military-industrial complex and for the corporations in general. Lockheed Martin members are on its board, and it's also financed by Coors Beer, Hertz Rent-A-Car, Holiday Inns, Ocean Spray Cranberries, Reader's Digest. And they are one of the main pushers for Star Wars. And so the media is not independent in this country. The media is orchestrated, really, by the Heritage Foundation, who has a raft of about 1,000 fellows, very well paid, who write op-ed pieces, who run seminars for the Congress, who draft legislation, who are ubiquitous on the television and radio, and they're little advertising representatives for the corporations. They have no right to be there. The press should not even think of interviewing them. And they don't even get questioned adequately. So what I'm doing, as well as publishing this book, is setting up an institute called the Nuclear Policy Research Institute, and I want to take on full frontal people from the Heritage Foundation and debate with them on Jim Lehrer, on Nightline with Ted Koppel, so that we can tell the truth to the American people as we did in the 80s. If you want to find out about NPRI, Nuclear Policy Research Institute, you can go to the website called nuclearcommonsense.org. nuclearcommonsense.org. It's all ready to go now. Got a web page, got a proposal, we've got an executive director. All I need to do is raise the necessary money, up to $1 million a year for 5 years, and I promise you that we will close down all the nuclear reactors in this country, and we will abolish nuclear weapons bilaterally with Russia, who is now a friend. All we need is the money, and that's not a lot of money, $1 million. So if anyone has a friend or themselves has money that they need to invest to help to save the planet, we would be very grateful to receive that donation. It's, as I said, tax-free, and you can find out how to do it by going to the website at nuclearcommonsense.org.
This organization will be based in L.A., is that right?
It will be based either in L.A. or the Bay Area. I'm looking at it now to work out where best it should be.
So you'll be staying here in the United States for some time?
Yes, if I get the money, I'm going to, with some sadness, have to leave my grandchildren and my place in Australia for a few years to try and, you know, make sure my grandchildren and all the children of the world have a future.
Now, on the issue of Star Wars, it's been said that the September 11th attacks have heightened the need for this deployment of Star Wars.
That's a lie.
You think that's a lie, yeah?
Well, how is Star Wars going to stop a civilian airplane flying into a building? How is it? And all those men needed were box cutters bought for 50 cents from a shop. So Star Wars has nothing to do with any of this. And you can smuggle a nuclear weapon in by driving a U-Haul trailer across the Mexican border, the Canadian border. You can put it into a container being brought into the port in New York or any other port in this country. You can fly a little aeroplane with a nuclear weapon in it. And in fact, I'm quite surprised that there has not been nuclear terrorism thus far. You can fly an aeroplane into a nuclear power plant. There are 103 of those around the country. And if you did, you would contaminate an area probably 10 times the size of Pennsylvania if you include the reactor's fuel in the core and all the cooling spent fuel rods in the cooling pool beside the reactor. It would be a catastrophe beyond imagination. There would be hundreds of thousands, if not millions, of cases of cancer occurring in years ahead, particularly in children who are terribly radio sensitive. There would be an epidemic of children born with gross congenital malformations, as is happening in Iraq, where America really used nuclear weapons in Iraq, depleted uranium weapons. And so terrorists don't need nuclear weapons. Mm. They can just, it's very easy to sabotage a reactor, the cooling system, the cooling water, the electricity and the like. And I'm surprised it hasn't. Now, so Star Wars won't impact any of those situations. There are five layers of Star Wars. One is theater missile defense. So say China launches a short-range missile at Taiwan. Taiwan is being armed with Patriot missiles made in America, which is an anti-missile missile, which is supposed to send out the missile or find the missile that China's launched and in those few seconds hit it. So two missiles hit in midair, ballistic missiles, like hitting a bullet with a bullet, impossible. That's a lower layer. Then the next three layers are these. If Russia launches a ballistic missile, it shoots off and spends 10 seconds in the atmosphere before it enters the space. It takes about 20-25 minutes to go through space, and then the terminal phase is when it re-enters the atmosphere. Now, most of the Russian missiles and Americans are MIRVed, multiple re-entry vehicles, they have up to 10 bombs on each missile. So the easiest way to hit a missile is in the boost phase as it's going through the atmosphere while it's still got its 10 bombs on board before it gets into space and the bus, these are Pentagon words, the bus containing its passengers, which are the 10 bombs, continues through space and then the bombs each separate and go off independently and land on target. Then you have 10 targets. Plus, you can blow up Mylar balloons and they can be released and they look like bombs in space. So it'll never work. So if you hit a missile in the boost phase in the first 10 seconds, you get 10 bombs. But the trouble is, in each bomb is 10 pounds of plutonium. Plutonium is so deadly that half a pound, hypothetically, if evenly distributed, could give everyone on Earth lung cancer. You would then distribute 100 pounds of plutonium in the atmosphere over the country where the missile was launched. That's called evil. Now, there is no time for human input in 10 seconds as the missile's going up through the atmosphere, so you have to have what's called a battle management computer. What happens is that there's a satellite in space with infrared detectors that picks up the fire coming out of the missile, radios back to Pine Gap, the biggest CIA base in the world in Central Australia, which radios back to the CIA or to Rondeno Beach in California, which then radios to the Pentagon control and lets the battle management computer know, and in that 10 seconds, the computer makes a decision with no human input. And as you know, garbage in, garbage out. Computers make mistakes all the time. And so we will be in the hands of a computer. And what this thing does, Star Wars I call it, as Reagan did, but the clever people in the Pentagon now and the Bush administration call it National Missile Defense, which is a euphemism for Star Wars. It's going to violate the Anti-Ballistic Missile Treaty. And the best way to overcome your anti-missile missiles is Russia can build thousands more. And so can China. And both Russia and China said, you do that, we're going to build thousands more nuclear weapons. So it will initiate a massive, massive new nuclear arms race. Incidentally, China's only got 20 missiles and can hit you. So she's not a threat at all at the moment. Right. But she will become one if they go ahead, these man-men go ahead with Star Wars. And then little countries that have no nuclear weapons say, well, you're doing all this anti-ballistic missile work and you're violating the treaties and you're starting to test new nuclear weapons, which America said she will, we'll build them too. So you get vertical proliferation with the superpowers already building more and lateral proliferation with little non-nuclear nations building their own weapons. Now, that's not all. The fifth layer is another one, and it's called the militarization of space. Mm-hmm. For many years, NASA's been mapping the planets, not for life, but for rare minerals, and the asteroids and the moon. And what they plan to do is put nuclear reactors up there with colonies of men to mine the minerals and bring them back to Earth. You pay for it, the taxpayers, but the corporations get the profit if it works. Now, if America expends so much money in space doing this, she has to dominate and own space. So what America is planning to do, it's actually being built now by Lockheed Martin, is to build anti-satellite weapons to wipe out the eyes and ears of the enemy or anyone who wants to attack you. It's going to build laser beam weapons so that they can vaporize whole cities in a flash of light. They're doing that right now. It's going to put nuclear reactors in space to fuel the laser beam technology and probably orbiting hydrogen bombs. Now, space belongs to all the people on the planet, not 5% of the world's population. All of us. America has no right to militarize space. And there is a treaty, the Outer Space Treaty, saying you're not to militarize space. No one is. And also they want to mine the moon. The moon belongs to us, not to America. And you can understand why the rest of the world is horrified by what these bush cowboys are up to. Horrified. And what I hope to do in this book too, and having written this book, The New Nuclear Danger, is to educate people in this country who are really good people so that they will rise up and say, okay, we're going to get rid of the nuclear weapons now.
What kind of tactics should people use to combat this?
Well, I think anything is up for grabs at the moment. In the 80s, what I did was lead a movement by being the president of Physicians for Social Responsibility. In 1978, when I started in America, 100% of Americans almost said, better red than dead. Better dead than red, I'm sorry. I mean, we'd rather be dead than be communist. And I used to say, don't be ridiculous. And they'd say, yeah, we'd rather be dead. And I say, do you know what happens if a bomb drops on San Francisco? And they'd say, no. So I'd describe the medical consequences. 5 miles of radius, you're all vaporized. You turn into gas. You know, 20 miles from the epicenter, you're all so burnt that you'll die in a few days, and the White House is stockpiling morphia so that you can have morphia as you're dying. 50 miles away, Santa Cruz, if you look at the flash, you'll be instantly blinded. Your eyes will melt and run down your cheeks. And people said, oh, my God. They said, nuclear war's bad for our health. In 5 years, we, the Physicians for Social Responsibility, taught the American people the ghastly consequences of nuclear war, and 80% rose up and said, we've got to stop this. So you create a revolution of thought and action by education, and we have to do that again, but this time we must finish our job, and we must abolish nuclear weapons throughout the world. Russia, who's best friends now, China, who said she would, France said she would, England said she would, and Israel would take a bit of arm twisting. Because Israel's got 200 bombs.
We're speaking with Dr. Helen Caldicott. She's live in our studios. And we welcome your calls if you want to ask a question of Dr. Helen Caldicott. The number here is 427-FRSC. Dr. Caldicott, you were quoted by Dixie Lee Ray in her book, Trashing the Planet. And your quote was, scientists who work for nuclear power or nuclear energy have sold their soul to the devil. They are either dumb, stupid, or highly compromised. I read this quote and I was reminded of the case of Dr. Wenho Lee, the Los Alamos National Laboratory scientist who was put on trial and jailed for 9 months for espionage. What is your opinion of the case? What are your thoughts on it?
Oh, I still stand by that. And I guess I go back to what Einstein said when he discovered the splitting of the atom, E equals MC squared. He said the splitting of the atom changed everything save man's mode of thinking. Thus, we drift towards unparalleled catastrophe. So people who work building nuclear reactors, they may be nice people. And building nuclear weapons and testing them are either dumb, stupid, or highly compromised. They may be intelligent, but highly compromised. Because there can only be... I can't tell you the number of children's beds I've sat beside as they've died of leukemia. Or cystic fibrosis, which is my specialty. Nuclear power and nuclear weapons invoke those diseases, induce them. My heritage, my vocation is to save lives. That's why I was born. And over my dead body, does anyone kill a child by inducing leukemia or cancer in them? And for me, that's wicked. And one of the Ten Commandments says, thou shalt not kill. And that means with a gun, or a bomb, or a nuclear weapon, or radioactive waste.
You just quoted something from the Ten Commandments, and I listen to your talks and read your books and articles and essays, and oftentimes you do quote biblical passages. I'm curious if you are you Christian? Are you
No.
of the faith?
No, I'm not. I think Jesus was a wonderful psychiatrist, and that's why his teachings, he was very clever and taught in parables so people remembered them. And what if we live according to the way Jesus told us to live, we'd have no problems. But it's a big ask to be entirely unselfish. It's a big ask. I mean, I was here on September 11th, and I had to address a forum of 3,000 students, and I thought, what am I going to do? So I went to Luke. And I quoted Jesus, and I said, now tonight you've got to listen to me. And I said, being a Christian doesn't mean going to church on Sunday, and it doesn't mean going up to meet Jesus in the sky when you die. I said, it means practicing what he preached. And he said, love thine enemies. Do good to those who hate you. Love thine enemy. Do good to those who hate you. And if America had done that, I don't think the Middle East would be blowing up like this. There wouldn't, America wouldn't be breeding more terrorists. America would have sussed out and found Al-Qaeda and Osama bin Laden, if in fact he did it, by using its very expert intelligence agencies, working with MI5 and MI6 in Britain and Mossad in Israel, and found all these people and brought them to the International Court of Justice and tried them like they tried the Nazis. That's what should have happened. And fed the people in Afghanistan, 7.5 million of whom are starving and refugees. You know, help to fix the world.
We have a caller. Go ahead and fire away, please.
Hey there. Glad to hear you're still speaking up there, Helen. Thank you very much.
That's my pleasure.
I'm concerned about what seems to be the disappearance of the peace movement in the U.S., and I'm wondering, since you've been probably making more tracks than I have, I'm pretty much stuck here in Santa Cruz, whether in your, you know, public appearances or just your general travels, have you seen people generally paralyzed into silence, not only on the issue of nuclear war, but on the issue of U.S. involvement, inappropriate involvement overseas, and this bogus war on terrorism? Or do you see some signs of hope and, you know, the rebirth of the peace movement? In Santa Cruz, for example, we have a city council that refuses to even consider a resolution against the bombing. So I'm just love to hear what your thoughts are on this.
Yeah, well, I've just started my current book tour at the moment, and so I can't give you a report on that, but I was here about 6 weeks ago, or 2 months ago, and I spoke extensively in the Bay Area and Berkeley and elsewhere, and people were so, I think, relieved by what I said. They were stamping their feet, so I thought there was going to be an earthquake. I think people are desperate, really desperate to hear the truth, and this awful, god-awful patriotism and silence reminds me of the McCarthy era. And the Bush administration have brilliantly used the terrorist attacks to keep everyone in line. And it's time now that people restarted their critical thinking, spoke out as true members of a working democracy, and investigated what the Bush people are really up to. And they're up to no good, let me assure you. The peace movement, I think that there are two things. There's the intimidation that's occurred since September 11th, which I'm going to try and bust through on this tour if I can, if I get some national media. But there's also the sense, I think, that after the Cold War ended, everything went away. And what happened, I explain in my book, The New Nuclear Danger, is that Clinton had no, what they say, cojones, because he smoked some dope and he never went to Vietnam and he couldn't take on the military. And they tried to get rid of the nuclear weapons, but there was a huge battle within the Pentagon with his team doing his nuclear posture review. And the Joint Chiefs of Staff won, and the weapons stayed in place. And as one of the military people said at the end, he said, "Baby, if you threaten our missiles," he said, "you're threatening the family jewels." Now, you know what the family jewels are. Mm-hmm. So you have to know that the Pentagon's thinking and psychology is very sexual. It's very testosterone-oriented. And as in medicine, if you don't diagnose the cause of the disease, you can't cure it. And the cause of this nuclear disease that infects the planet is man's mind. Not all men, but some men who are fairly, I'd have to say, in the light of the fact that we could be annihilated tonight, have to say they're fairly deranged. And I think the people running the Bush administration, they're absolutely the nuclear larrikins. Do you know what a larrikin is? Is that an American word?
No.
Well, I suppose like a cowboy. They seem to have such a sense of psychic numbing. I mean, I even wonder if on their deathbeds they would really understand what they've been up to, or if they're just so totally blocked. But those people are inappropriate now to be running the world of today. We need people who are in touch with their feelings, who've helped children die, who understand how sacred life is and how incredibly vulnerable it is and fragile at the moment. We need statespeople. I see no statespeople here. Where are the Cyrus Vances? Or even the George Shultzes who turn into a statesperson working with Shevardnadze? Or FDR? You haven't got any. Or the ones you've got have been silenced. The silence of the lambs. Well, this has to stop. And we also need, may I say, more women. I don't mean Madeleine Albright's or those sort of people. Or Condoleezza Rice. I mean women. And I think we need to take a leaf out of the book of France, where they passed a parity law which said that 50% of all people running for political office have to be women. And that's beyond time here. And I'm not saying there aren't silly women, good women, dumb women, bright women, intelligent, but on the whole, estrogen and progesterone have a different effect upon the brain physiologically than does testosterone. You look at adolescent girls, they're always talking about falling in love and what they're wearing and their feelings and stuff. And adolescent boys, they get in their car, rum, rum, and they start off and they're at 100 miles an hour in 3 seconds. And that's testosterone. Now, it was appropriate. You know, they're ready to reproduce. The guys are ready to sow their seeds all over the place. And little girls are ready to receive the seed. But now the women have to really stand up and say, look, we have the babies. We do 2/3 of the world's work. We're 53% of the world's population. We own 1% of the property. And we're taking over now. You guys need your bottom smacked. You know, you've had enough time. You've really screwed it up, and now we're going to try and save the world for the children. And men like strong women anyway. They do. They feel more secure, I think, don't they?
Yes.
Yeah, the way you are. Yes. Yeah.
I'm curious to get your thoughts on overpopulation. Do you feel that we're about, 7 billion at this point and counting? How does this affect, you know, the resource distribution on the planet right now?
Well, we know that, don't we? I think 480 people, I think, own, I can't quite remember, about 10% of the world, of 90% of the world's wealth. The billionaires here are just, it's obscene. 20% of the world owns 80% of the world's wealth, and 80% has access to 20% of the world's wealth. And so 2/3 of the world's children are malnourished and starving. The women need to be educated. They need to be well fed. They need access to free birth control. And then the women will stop having babies. The right wing of this country, and they call themselves Christians, they're not Christian bootlaces, they are preventing the women getting contraceptives. And we are breeding totally out of control. I mean, we're a pathological organism upon this wonderful planet. In a way, we're almost an evolutionary aberrant. I mean, haven't we got the brains to know we've got to stop breeding? And it reminds me of when you, in medicine, or I would, you come in with a strep throat, I'd take a swab from your throat, I plate it on agar medium, I put it in the incubator, and within a day the colonies have grown, I put them on the slide, I do a scan, a stain, and see you've got strep. But if I leave that plate in the incubator, the colonies breed and breed, cover the plate, and then one day I go and they're all dead, because they've used up all the nutrients. That's exactly what we're doing.
How much time do you think we have?
Not much.
No.
Well, I had a program the other day to say within 10 years the coral reefs are all going to be dead from global warming. And I can't get it that people are still allowed to drive around in these obscene SUVs that do 15 miles a gallon. How on earth is that allowed? A chunk of ice broke off from the Antarctic the other day the size of Rhode Island. The islands just near New Guinea are being submerged. They can't grow crops anymore because their soil is so salty. What on earth are we doing? In Australia, we've got an epidemic of skin cancer. I've had a melanoma. 1 in 13 of us get melanoma. Here it's 1 in 90. I mean, we're killing the earth. We're chopping the forest down as fast as we can go. I see corporations with no moral responsibility at all. The bottom line is not money. The bottom line is the creation. The bottom line is life. Money can't be God. And remember what Jesus said? It's more difficult for a rich man to enter the kingdom of heaven than a camel to pass through the eye of a needle.
Well, I know you have a very busy day ahead of you. Just again, if you could give some contact information for the new organization, the Nuclear...
Yes, Nuclear Policy Research Institute, NPRI. Rolls nicely off the tongue.
NPRI.
You can go to the website called nuclearcommonsense.org and you can get all the information there. Find out if you want to donate money, you may. There's an email website there that you can do that. But particularly if anyone made a lot of money from their .com revolution and they really do want the earth to survive, and I can't tell you how dangerous it is now. We'd gladly receive your donation, and I absolutely promise you we'll come through with the goods.
Dr. Helen Caldicott, you'll be speaking tonight at the Del Mar Theater, 7:30 p.m., $10 to $25 sliding scale. Really thank you for joining us here today at Free Radio Santa Cruz. One last question before you go off that mic. Can I get a station ID from you?
This is Free Radio Santa Cruz, and this is Helen Caldicott signing off.